Cultivated Being Podcast. Welcome to the Cultivated Being Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Dr. Nick Hyde. This is my brother, Dr. Jake Hyde. Jake, what's
up? Hey, Nick. I'm here, everybody. Beautiful day.
We don't have an intro because we've always spontaneously done our intro. But maybe we will because we're 80 episodes in and it's just kind of like...
Holy smokes, 80?
Something like that, I think, yeah. 81 or 2 or something. Yeah, we're like getting old as a podcast. We've been around the block, okay? And today we're here to talk about some news stuff. We've got some news that we wanted to talk about. But, you know, as always, we're here to really talk about whatever's fresh on our minds as doctors, as brothers, talk about all kinds of life stuff here. And it's a healthy place, right? This is about bringing like the right perspective to life. This is about stepping into something truer, knowing what we know and our experience as clinicians, and having right perspective about health issues and everything under the sun. So that being said, what are we going to talk about today?
Well, Nick, you mentioned you read an interesting article and I've been dying to hear what this is all about since you first mentioned it like 5 minutes ago before we pressed record. So what do we got? Let's get into it.
Well, you know, this is the time of the year where people are doing a lot of detoxes. And I just wanted to refresh, you know, I wanted to learn something new about detox this time of the year because I get so many questions about it. And I found a really cool researcher, someone I've actually read before. His name's Dr. Dietrich Klinkhardt. He's in Germany, Berlin, Germany. But he's practiced in England and Switzerland. And I like a lot of studies that come from Switzerland. You know, Switzerland is cool about alternative health. It is on the same level as, it's not alternative there, put it that way. It's actually totally funded by the government. Everyone has a right to alternative health there, which is really interesting. So a lot of those who would be considered alternative healthcare doctors over there get a lot of research funded and they have lots of really cool things happening. So he's been doing that for like 40 years. He's done research on maybe 1200 people, I think, on toxicology. So really one of his expertise is, he's a medical doctor, but one of his expertise is how to detox naturally. And one thing that when he first started studying this, I think he found, if I could find the actual number here. So when he first started studying, he found that the average German, where he was doing the study, had 20 toxins that he could detect in their blood. And he said, around 15 years later, he's found his average person has over 500 toxins in their blood that he can obviously test out and find 500 different toxins in their blood.
Now, I don't know if the article goes into this level of depth, but like toxic is a relative term, right? Because like technically there's a toxic level of any substance, like water, for example, right? There's a limit in certain things like arsenic, which we know is very toxic, is technically it's a trace mineral that we need a bit of to be fully healthy, right? So
these are not naturally occurring.
Synthetic.
These are synthetic,
500 synthetic toxins, holy moly.
And that's in Germany. I mean, like, it might be different in America. We might have more.
Probably.
But certainly that's a lot. And they go into difference between water soluble, fat soluble toxins, which I thought was really interesting. A lot of people don't know that, you know, we have these fat soluble toxins that a lot of them are meant to kill stuff. So insecticides, pesticides, herbicides, and they settle into fatty tissue, which guess what? That's like brain tissue. That's a neurotoxin, you know, neurotoxic. And
a lot of water soluble gets kind of in our bloodstream, gets filtered through, and eventually we can excrete that one a little bit better. Not that it doesn't affect our cells, because our cells are mostly water.
Yeah.
But yeah. Well, and there's a ton of water in our brain too. So both are pretty dangerous.
Yeah. And yeah, they're both pretty dangerous. Now, this was an interesting part of the, of his studies that I've never been exposed to. It kind of makes sense. But he discovered that most times when people have a toxic load, it really does settle in one area of the body, like a certain tissue or a certain organ. I was like, well, that makes sense, but that's not something I really thought about, I guess. So, but for all of you out there, you know, you're dealing with certain toxicity. You might only notice it with one region of your body, one system of your body. This is why, like, you know, heavy metals, people notice it with, you know, brain fog and, you know, cognitive issues. Whereas he says, you know, for instance, like, I guess thimerosal, he was talking about a bunch, and glyphosate, he says you can notice a lot of issues in like the kidneys. I'm trying to find exactly, this is a long article, but you could find like specific issues in different parts of your body. And then he also noticed, because people, there's a high correlation with toxicity and parasites and other bugs like Lyme's disease and, you know, others, where there's critters involved, and there's this high correlation. People are like, well, what came first, you know, this infectious particle, this disease process, or the toxicity? He says usually the toxicity creates an environment where critters are happy, which I thought was just super interesting. I'd never heard that before. So like Bartonella, Lyme, herpes viruses, for instance.
Do you think part of that is just because the virus, or the toxin, I should say, the toxin, it makes our immune system more vulnerable, or makes the system as a whole vulnerable? So all of our natural defenses are down, and then the virus is like, cool, the coast is clear. At least like security systems in place are preoccupied. Or do you think these toxins, so that's kind of immunological, but these toxins affect our natural microbes, our natural microbiome, the good bacteria in our gut? It's poisonous to them too, like it's poisonous to us. Because they're our main defense mechanism in our gut. And this is where parasites and viruses can like begin thriving. So the toxins that we consume or we're exposed to in our environment kill the natural microbiome? Or does the article talk about this?
Well, he...
Did you not finish the article, Nick? You didn't get there yet?
Well, if I understand your... It's not kind of like you had two questions there, or two points that you made. I feel like, well, first of all, most of these toxins, they're not all... immunosuppressive, meaning like they're just like dampening your immune system. And you think about in a certain area, right? Because you have certain immune cells that are specific to area, specific to, you know, maybe your blood, specific to bone, specific to like tissue. So they are immunosuppressive. Some are just immunodisturbing, I think is the best way of saying it. Because some upregulate the immune system, some downregulate. But so that is a feature of, I guess, a lot of different, I mean, when you talk about 500 different contaminants, and the list is so long of what they can do. So yes. I don't think I have all the information about that, but,
something I think that's important to note is these substances get approved by regulating bodies that are going to be considered generally safe. And they're tested to be generally safe, not on humans necessarily, sometimes just lab rats, which have different nervous systems, different immune systems. But also they're tested in isolation because they're looking for a lethal dose or a dose that's going to be considered unsafe. And toxins have very synergistic effect. I don't know if there's a negative word that means the same thing as synergy, yeah. But it's, they combine and they're more powerful together than they are by themselves. Or I should say they're more destructive together. So it's exponential, not just arithmetic. So one toxin your body could probably deal with in a pretty good amount. But you start compounding different ones and they interact differently in your system, and maybe still below this threshold of what the government's like, yeah, this is safe. This substance is safe in this amount. And you stay underneath that threshold, but it's not just that one substance. There's 499 others potentially that are interacting.
Yeah. Yeah. Not to mention if the person has, throw on top of that, an immunosuppressive infection that's constantly going on, like maybe HIV or some other retrovirus, or they have any other compromising thing happening in their body. I mean, anything
like,
they have,
like they're stressed at work,
like they're stressed or they or have an under, you know, they have hypothyroidism, right? Maybe they don't have enough thyroid hormone to activate and metabolize their body.
Which is like getting close to a quarter of the population is hypothyroid.
Yeah. And you know, most rats don't live long enough to develop all these other issues and bioaccumulate all these other toxins.
Yeah. And especially the fat soluble ones, they can stay in your system for the whole life.
Yeah. I had a teacher that, he did a lot of drugs at one point in his life, long before he was my professor. But he started losing a lot of weight, and because of these fat cells holding on to certain toxins and certain drugs that he had taken before, we actually saw him trip out once in classroom. He was teaching and he's just losing weight. He hadn't taken drugs in like 20 years or something like that. And wow. He just started tripping out in class, and we all saw that. We knew him. We loved the guy. So we were like, no big deal, right? We're forgiving, but I don't think the administration would have been really happy.
Well, you're tattling on him. That's important to know, because people have the ability now, there's ways to lose weight really quickly. The science is better on weight loss. There's devices and there's diet plans and all kinds of things where you can lose a pound a day or more. And you could become, well, too toxic in your blood. So, and here's what happens. Like, these fat cells break down, toxins get reintroduced back into your bloodstream, and your liver is going to want to filter them out, filters it out, gets put into the bile in the liver, goes in your gallbladder, gets put back in your small intestine, and ideally it gets eliminated in your stool. But some of that can get resorbed back into your bloodstream. So you can like re-toxify yourself. So we may have talked about this on the pod once before. I know if you're losing a lot of weight really quickly, some people recommend taking activated charcoal as a supplement in between your meals in the day, just to try to bind to some of those toxins that are getting eliminated in your bile.
Yeah. And since we're on the topic of binding stuff to fat soluble toxins, this is totally what you want to do. When you are eliminating toxins from your body, what you're trying to do is have enough of something else for them to bind to, these toxins to bind to other than you. So That's what you're trying to have enough saturation of that in your body. So like when you're losing weight, for instance, like Jake's talking about reabsorption. They actually did a study where, you know, people who are doing sauna therapy, obviously sweating is like one of the best ways of getting toxins out. However, there's a high reabsorption rate when you're sweating.
So you want to shower, bathe?
You want to shower, you want to bathe, you want to have some of these other things that, you know, just to help your, so one thing that they actually found a good binding agent, chlorella is one that's a really good binding agent for fat soluble toxins, or one that I didn't know, it's Eclonia cava, which is a brown algae. And then you can also get gels like a methylated silica. Silica has always been really good at binding with toxins. And you can get a gel so you can put it on yourself when you're in the sauna or something like that. I guess, I don't know. This is people who've done these studies.
Rub it over your whole body?
Yeah.
The Corella is a supplement. You could take capsules. You can get a powder, put it in smoothies.
And it's good for you no matter what, but yeah, obviously
totally
great binding agent. So that's really cool. And then since we're talking about this, you know, fat versus water soluble, here are some strategies for water soluble. Actually, maybe we should go into some of the water soluble toxins because they're all a little bit different. We've talked about glyphosate a bunch.
That's the number one agent or compound in Roundup, the pesticide, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's everywhere, basically.
Yeah. And the thing about glyphosate, well, there's lots of things about glyphosate, but one thing that it does is it competes with a amino acid that you really need called glycine. And it looks just like it. So it binds where glycine should be. It'll bind to your body.
Yeah. So the important thing you need to know about binding, which is when two molecules kind of fit into each other. When Nick says it looks like it, these chemicals, so your basic, you break down structures, think H2O, the most common one. You know, it's two hydrogens connected to a big old oxygen molecule, and it's got a shape that looks like Mickey Mouse. So when you get more complex shapes, like glyphosate's a lot more complex, and these other amino acid structures, what Nick's saying is when it looks like glycine, it's similar shape. And a lot of the function in chemistry has to do with shape and configuration of molecules. So binding sites are looking for, you know, it's a basic childhood game of like fitting pegs into holes that are the right shape. That's a lot of what biochemistry is. So when it says competing, like we need these binding sites for things like glycine, and what's going to happen is glyphosate competes with it. So it interrupts with our ability to bind, or you could say utilize, an important amino acid.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think we've talked a little bit about glyphosate and some of the harm. I mean, it's a huge disruptor of everything. I mean, it'll really affect you hormonally. It'll affect your digestion like crazy. Obviously you're taking large people who take on a lot of glyphosate, it's usually through their gut because they're eating something that's saturated with glyphosate, which is an herbicide. And, so is it an insecticide?
I think glyphosate is a pesticide, insecticide, and herbicide. I think
That's why it's the biggie. That's why it's used on like everything.
I think it's designed to just kill whatever.
Yeah.
And so they make plants that are genetically modified to be tolerant of glyphosate.
And but they don't make us to be genetically tolerant of glyphosate.
Not yet anyway. But yeah, we're a big old dumb animal that won't be killed by it immediately.
It is.
The little bugs, the little critters are like, yeah, this is bad for me. I'm not going to bother with this plant.
Yeah. So that's kind of the moral of the story. And I find that, you know, clinically, I would say I notice it a lot with digestion. If people have digestive issues, this is a huge factor for them. Because I don't see people like long term enough at this point to be like, yeah, this started when you started to have GMO and glyphosate in your diet back like 40 years ago or whatever. But for right now, I'm like, this is a huge disruptor. Let's just get you off of GMO and, you know, off of non-organic food And usually the, just going from that, a lot of people experience huge benefits just starting to eat organic, which organic is a weird label because it just means normal. I wish we labeled it that way. It's like normal and abnormal fruits and veggies, but yeah,
that would be a lot better.
Yeah. Cause people look at organic and they just mean, oh, that's the fancy one, but it's not.
And a lot of times it doesn't seem fancy, right? Like you'll look at when organic, or you would say the normal section and the abnormal section are next to each other. Sometimes the abnormal, the non-organic foods just look better. They look like the fancier foods.
Totally. Yeah. So anyways, Klinghart talks a lot about how to detox from glyphosate. And he says, basically all you want to do is saturate yourself with its competitor, with glycine. And it's really inexpensive. So that's an awesome way of detoxing. You could take a lot of glycine powder. He says what he recommends is 4 grams twice a day. And then you lower the dose to 1 gram twice a day. And then, you know, you're basically doing this for like a few weeks. It's kind of a few week protocol. You don't really ever need a detox for that long. It's kind of the idea of any detox program is doing it for a time.
It's worth noting that you've been detoxing your whole life.
Yeah.
Like doing a detox is intentionally trying to detox more efficiently for a certain period. And you could target different things. You could do like GI detoxing, and you could do liver detoxing, kidney detoxing, things like that. But you are already doing it just sitting there. This is about like maximizing what your body's already doing.
Yeah. So that was actually his only, he's like, just take a lot of glycine and then that should be good, basically.
That's a hot tip. So who listening out there, Nick, should probably be more inclined to try this?
The glycine.
Should everybody do it? Is there certain signs that maybe your glyphosate levels are too high?
Well, I would recommend anyone who's going to do a detox. You know, I don't really like these general detoxes that are out there that, you know, a lot of detox, I'll put it this way. I there's some research and evidence to back this up, but a lot of, if you just buy a detox packet, like a kit, and it has a bunch of chemicals in it, or chemicals, has a bunch of supplements in it that are supposed to help you detox. They show that these supplements in one way or another do help you get stuff out of your body. They make, they activate the liver to do more. Usually that's usually the big thing. And then they have other stuff like milk thistle and whatever else. They have a lot of diuretics in them, usually like dandelion root, which just, you know, forces you to pee more and get liquid from the different areas of your body out. Right. So like, underneath the skin, these different air, like they try to target with diuretics and everything. I don't really like these because it's not that specific to actual toxins. And a lot of people have this experience that they feel better after the detox, because really what happens is during the detox, they feel really crappy.
Right.
They basically activate their body to release a bunch of toxins, and they feel the effect of a lot of toxins being released, but then they get reabsorbed, and whenever they finish the supplement, they feel experientially better because they're no longer having the symptoms of having a bunch of toxins floating around in their blood. That's what I've seen clinically with a lot of these different detox kits. Now, there are some really expensive ones that are super good, but for the most part, that's what I see. So I like doing more specific ones. So I would totally do one for, you know, glyphosate, especially if you're like, well, last 6 months, I didn't eat organic and I, you know, I probably accumulated a lot, and right now I'm trying to lose some weight, or I want to feel better, quickly. And, or maybe I'm going to go do some adventure where, or maybe I'm preparing for something. I'm preparing to have a baby. I'm preparing to, you know, maybe you have some goals for this year and you want to start to like do little things here and there just to get better. I am all about doing like 4 weeks at a time of any health adventure, you know? So it's like, okay, I'm going to do this workout for 4 weeks. I'm going to do this, you know, routine for 4 weeks. I don't do much above that because I don't have like that kind of motivation. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a really cool thing to do. You're like, okay, maybe I'm going to pick a couple of toxins to detox from. That's for me. I feel like that's the person I'm talking to right now. But if you think that someone has some symptoms that show they need to detox from glyphosate, what would you say, Jake? Maybe something that shows that you like, this is the ideal person that needs to detox from glyphosate.
Well, glyphosate's one of those substances that targets your mitochondria, those little powerhouses inside of your cells that are producing energy for you. So that symptomatically can look like anything. But generally fatigue's going to be one of them. It's just like, man, I wish I had more energy. And like fatigue doesn't just have to be like my body's ability to get up and do work. It's like, can you think clearly throughout the day, right? Do you have energy spikes and dips? Are you forgetting things? Because your focus, not what it used to be. And for some of you, that might have been true for the last 20 years. So it might not be something that you've noticed recently. So like you said, I do a lot of little health experiments for 30 days. Taking glycine doesn't seem like a, like it's pretty low risk, potentially high reward experiment. So I think that person out there that's like, yeah, you know, I need a health upgrade. And I mean, if you're already doing a thing for health upgrade, don't overdo it, right?
Yeah.
So you're already starting like an experiment, stick with what you're doing. But if you're just sitting there being like, well, I think I could take 4 grams of lysine twice a day, that doesn't seem too hard, maybe try that. But again, exercise and sweating is a really good way to detox. And drinking tons of water. Those are like two basically free. I know it's people pay for water these days, and I know that most people exercise in gyms or some kind of thing where it costs money, but nonetheless, pretty natural ways to just be good at detoxing altogether and just try to eat better food, have less toxins.
Yeah. I would like to talk about one more toxin specifically.
Okay.
And this is aluminum. The reason why I want to talk about aluminum is a couple of doctors that I follow with this, including Klinghart, which is this article about, but some other ones like Dr. Stephanie Seneff, some other people, or Cola, whatever else, they talk about aluminum being basically the worst toxin that we have in our body because it can affect everything. And it basically changes the voltage of every cell wall, every one of your cells. So it can impair every cell in your body from doing its job. It's crazy when you think about that. It's really powerful when it comes to blocking hormones and affecting the way your brain transmit and, you know, information. You talk about cell wall structure, like, you know, every vital nutrient that goes into a cell has to pass through the cell wall in one way or another. So aluminum can effectively just kill cells really well and block cells' abilities to do its job. So it really can affect everything. But one thing that they found, it affects kind of more than anything else is the thyroid. So anyone who has an underactive thyroid might have aluminum toxicity.
How about that? Because that's a lot of people right now.
Yeah. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of it is relating to autoimmunity for thyroid issues. And that's still very much true. But when it comes to, you know, so this is 90% of all thyroid issues look like and act like autoimmunity, which is basically, this is why it's so sinister and hard to find out on blood labs. You might have totally normal blood labs at some point. Mm-hmm. And so they take the blood lab, things look good. But you're like, but last year, I had a ton of low thyroid symptoms. Why do my labs look normal? This is one of those reasons, right? Aluminum isn't going to affect it 24 hours a day. It's going to affect it certain times, not forever, you know? So it'll look like you have totally normal thyroid in your blood, generally speaking. And it's also affecting the cell's ability to use that thyroid hormone. So you have enough thyroid in your blood. The doctor sees it. Maybe you're on medication. He's like, oh, this is the sweet spot. We've been giving you thyroid hormone replacement therapy. This is the dosage we were doing. And now look, your blood lab's normal. You're good to go. But you're like, but I'm having so many thyroid symptoms, right? This is really frustrating for a lot of people. And actually studies show that 90% of people feel this way who have thyroid issues. So aluminum, and I'm not saying aluminum is the only reason, it's one of the reasons. It was a huge disruptor for thyroid hormone. Now they found that the number one way people get aluminum in their system, I was surprised about this, but it's through antacids.
Antacids are laced with aluminum?
Yeah. They found that that's the number one way people get aluminum hydroxides into their body. I was really surprised about that. Obviously, drinking, I know soda from aluminum cans can do that because there's properties in the actual soda that can take strip metal, right? This is why people will clean engines with soda sometimes.
Oh, well, you're talking not soda as in bubbly water. You're talking soda as in like Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Because like your typical lime-flavored sparkling water is not going to strip metal, right?
Right. But so that's another way. But obviously, you know, anyways, antacids is the number one way people get aluminum into their body.
Okay. Well, that being said, should people be taking as much antacids as they are? Because heartburn is a thing. Gas reflux is a common thing.
Yeah, this is a great topic of conversation, actually.
Would you, Nick, if you had acid reflux, would you be taking an antacid?
No. There are so many other things you can do.
And is the problem that you're producing too much acid, or is the problem that your stomach's not working?
Well, it's a very leading question, but this, your stomach's not working. It's not too much. And usually it's too little.
It's too little or yeah. So a lot of people have acid reflux because, stomach contents are kind of staying in your stomach and not moving through. So your stomach's goal is to break down food into smaller molecules, but just like a liquidy goo thing called chyme, right? Now am I remembering that? Chyme?
It's a cool word.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. It's kind of interesting. Well, it's a fitting word maybe for what it is, but it's like broken down food. And your stomach's job is to do that, primarily proteins, because proteins are harder to break down. Like your mouth can break down carbohydrate and starch. But your stomach wants to break down proteins and it needs a lot of acid to do that. And if your acid's low because your digestive enzymes are depleted, because which happens with age, you have a harder time making enough digestive enzymes to do all the work of eating. Cause a lot of, you know, people are still eating 3 to 5 meals a day. Which there's good research saying like, it's not necessary to really even eat that much anymore, especially as you age. But on top of that, when you're in fight or flight, when you're in your stress response, your secretions, your digestive secretions are going to be suppressed as well. So then you have this food sitting in your stomach not being broken down. And so your stomach is not releasing contents into the small intestine, right? That's called your pyloric sphincter. Yes. Am I remembering that? There's a lot of sphincters in your body. I think that one's called your pyloric. Maybe that could be wrong, but that's my best guess. Anyway, it's just not. So that gate's shut. And so you're just having things like contents are just sitting in your stomach and there's only one way out. And it's back where, you know, back where it came. So like you're going to get acid kind of buildup, but it's an antacid's just, again, going to further shut down. It's going to relieve symptoms, but what you need is to digest better. So a lot of doctors now are recommending like betaine and hydrochloric acid. So actually they're recommending more acid in a sense, not antacid. And that works for a lot of people and it's a lot healthier for you to do.
Yeah. It's important to know too that like your stomach is a beast. I mean, if you took out some stomach acid and poured it on anything, including your hand, you would freak out. It would be very painful.
Yeah.
Now, what's cool about your stomach is it has a mucous membrane that protects you. What actually...
Ideally.
Yeah. What actually helps this mucous membrane? Well, your vagus nerve actually controls the production of it, number one. So we'll talk about a little hack that you can do to help stimulate more mucus secretion in your whole gut, but especially your stomach, to protect you from that acid. But the other aspect of it is one thing kills it. And that has to do with NSAIDs. So your NSAIDs that you take.
So these are non-steroid anti-inflammatory drugs.
Yeah. And, basically that attacks prostaglandin 2, which is a molecule that you make. And that molecule actually is in charge of making some, you know, stimulating mucus secretions in your gut, in your stomach. So when you take NSAIDs, you start to make less and less of that. Now, this is an interesting, like, vicious cycle because people who develop ulcers in their gut, in their stomach, tend to take too many NSAIDs, but it's so painful that they end up taking more. You know, having ulcers is extremely excruciatingly painful. So, and then you have little critters that will go into those places and make it even worse. So this is a vicious cycle. But one thing you want to do if you're having heartburn and you take a lot of NSAIDs, number one, I would say is try to take less. There's other things you can do to help your pain. And then number two, you got to stimulate the vagus nerve. We've talked about this before. My favorite way is gargling. You could also sing loudly, or you can do my least favorite way, coffee enemas. So those are really your three options. Meditation is shown to stimulate the vagus nerve as well.
Yeah, you could just do like breathing exercises too. Just rhythmic, slow, deep breaths work.
But I will say clinically, gargling has been one of the all-time most effective means of treating all kinds of stuff in my office. So if you haven't gargled before, doesn't matter what you gargle, you're just trying to move those throat muscles, stimulate the throat muscles a bunch. And the same thing that controls those throat muscles is your vagus nerve. It's going to get stimulated throughout the rest of everything the vagus nerve does, which is like a lot of stuff.
A lot of your digestion.
Yeah. And I could almost guarantee if you gargle, if you've been having chronic, you know, issues related to digestion and you gargle for just a week, you'll start to notice improvement. I mean, pretty quickly, just gargling once a day, a couple times a day. I do it. Honestly, I'm not Superman, Jake. You know that. Superhuman.
Nick,
I'm a normal person.
Don't destroy my fantasy.
And I don't know what it was over the holidays, eating lots of meats, drinking lots of fine drinks, and not sleeping much. And that's a good recipe for getting stressed out and having lots of contents in your stomach and having heartburn, which I did. Mm-hmm. And for me, because I have, you know, somewhat healthy, I was experiencing that one day. I literally gargled, and then later that evening, I didn't have any, you know, just like an hour later, my heartburn was gone. So,
well, very good, Nicholas.
I would recommend it to everybody. But going back to the aluminum, if you want to clear that out naturally, cilantro has a bunch of silica, and it's really good at helping eliminate aluminum. Mm-hmm. Kind of the same stuff as binding that we were talking about. You could also take silica, you know, you could take cilantro extract.
Also called coriander for our listeners not in the United States.
Great, Jake. I forgot about that. And then also horsetail, which is a...
Literal tails of horses, Nick?
Yes. No, that would be really funny. Actually, probably not funny at all, but...
That's just a very medieval treatment. What you got to do is get some clippings from your horse's tail. Don't bother washing it.
Sleep with it for... definitely
put it under your pillow.
No, horsetail is... like an herb, and it has a lot of silica in it. I mean, silica, there's lots of silica. Silica is just really good at binding with stuff.
Excellent.
So that was a long detox thing, but.
Yeah, I think that's good enough for the pod. There's other things we get into, but we'll save it. Gotta go anyway.
It's nice to get a little mixture. I know lately we've been talking a lot about mindset, consciousness stuff, which it's maybe not everyone wants to talk about, but Jake and I could talk about forever.
Yeah, because it makes you a better detoxer.
Yeah.
Like the consciousness and mindset is, it supports everything else. So... listen to those. This is your first pod you're listening to, and you're like, this is pretty interesting pod on detoxing. Listen to our other weird ones about consciousness.
Honestly, I've changed the way I'm working with a lot of patients. I try to gauge where they're at in healing and health and everything. And my conversation changes a lot because truth is, many of the diets out there, I'm going to say this right now, and people, this might be shocking for somebody if this is your first time. I don't think diet totally matters. if consciousness, if you work on spirituality and consciousness, diet is irrelevant. You can fix every problem, every single problem in your health, every chronic health issue, even acute issues. Consciousness is the answer. But if you're not ready for that, if you don't want that, if you're not mature enough for that, well, detoxing and diet is a really good way of doing it.
Yeah. And on top of that too, so your body can synthesize whatever chemicals it needs. I mean, it's capable of. I'm not saying you, the listener, or you, Nick, your body's doing it, but it's capable. And, but also, when you're in line spiritually and you're really connected to that like bigger part, a truer part of yourself, you're just going to make good food choices intuitively.
That's true.
You don't have to subscribe to an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
you eliminate cravings. You eliminate like irrelevant urgings, and you just start to do the best stuff for yourself.
Yeah. You feed yourself from a place of love and care, not need or lack or scarcity or cravings or whatever. Pretty cool. All right, Nick, well, we did it. We brought in consciousness and spirituality.
When no one asks for it, we find a way.
All right. Well, that's pod again soon, Nick. I enjoyed doing this.
Yeah. Say in a week or so.
Yeah, let's do it. And, If you guys want a particular topic, you have particular questions, email us at becultivatedbeing@gmail.com.
The Cultivated Beans is Jake's other alter ego email. Don't email that one.
I have to get that. Now I have to get that email. Thanks, Nick. All right. Well, Nick, I got to go. I love you, man.
All right,
and I love you all for listening.